Good afternoon and welcome to the Followell Company. This is the Ignite Leadership Series podcast. Our guest today is Michael Seelman. Michael is the principal consultant and coach for Churchill Consultants, an international coaching, consulting, and inspirational speaking firm. He is co-founder and co-owner of Gov Coaches that serves America's public servants. Previously, he served in leadership positions at the Federal Bureau of Investigations, U.S. Department of Justice, and the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, and the White House, including roles in communications, employee engagement, intergovernmental liaison, knowledge management, innovation, leadership development, information technology, administration, and high-profile multi-city collaborative violence reduction initiatives. Michael did his undergraduate thesis and collaboration on a book with leadership scholar and Pulitzer Prize winning author James McGregor Burns at the University of Maryland and received his master's degree in public administration from Harvard University. Michael earned his Chief Information Officer certification from the U.S. Department of Defense and is Vice President of the Board of Trustees for a Youth Leadership Foundation. So welcome to the podcast, Michael Seelman. Well, Michael, we had a great bio from you. Why don't you tell us a little bit more, some personal things about you, a little bit more about yourself?
Yeah, so you covered my professional experience, which I've been really honored to serve the American people in the way that you describe. And I'm also really proud of my family. I have a six-year-old, a 13-year-old, and a wonderful wife. And in this new phase of life, I really get to enjoy their companionship and see them grow up.
Like myself, you've had some pretty significant changes in your career over the past year. Tell us about how you made those life and career changes in the direction that you're going in.
So, like many people, I struggle with having that right balance between professional goals and personal or family goals. I describe it as about a year ago, the system was blinking red, where my wife and I had an unbalanced life and we were spending too much time in our professional lives. And so what we did is we made a change where I was able to get more flexibility to help her with her business and then pursue some dreams so I could help reach my full potential of serving others.
Fantastic. You're working on some really cool things right now involving artificial intelligence and leadership. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, thanks for asking, Rob. I've just always been really fascinated with technology. And as you mentioned in that introduction, I have my Chief Information Officer certification. And I've also, for years or even decades, been a student of leadership. And this latest research we're doing with a team of people in the United States and the United Kingdom brings those two interests together. In the future, we believe that business executives need to think about not just leading their human workforce, but their machine workforce, their artificial intelligence empowered workforce. It's like having a new team member. You know, we talk about diversity and the importance of understanding the strengths and weaknesses and the cultural perspectives of every member of your team. Well, now we encourage business executives to think about they have a whole new team member that's actually a machine team member, and how to understand the strengths and weaknesses of the humans and the strengths and weaknesses of the machines, and how to really get the most of that synergistic collaboration between the two.
Wow, that's very exciting. I hopefully at some point in time, maybe we can have you back on and talk just about artificial intelligence and leadership. Very exciting stuff.
I'd love to do that. And what we're asking in our interviews is, what are the best practices for executives that have led those human and machine collaborations or had artificial intelligence enhanced operations? What are those best practices, those leadership best practices? And then we're also interviewing researchers in US and UK based research institutions. What's coming down the pike and what are the insights they're working on that business executives can take advantage of in the future?
That's really cutting edge. I'm excited for you.
Thank you.
Where do you feel that you've excelled in your career and in life, and what do you attribute that to?
I think one of my greatest strengths is collaboration. So you see that also in the theme of the research. And I've had an opportunity to do presentations on that. And the research I just mentioned, we're going to do a presentation about that human-machine collaboration at the International Leadership Association Global Conference. So that's kind of my superpower, is collaboration. And whether it's people in different roles, for instance, I've led gun violence efforts, national gun violence efforts that include mayors, police chief, ministers, hospital executives, to working on reducing gun violence. And also those collaborations have not just cut across traditional roles or stovepipes, but different geographies, bringing cities together in different parts of the country. And I do that by helping people to focus on the end goal, the outcome that they're all trying to achieve from different perspectives and in different methodologies, but having us focused on that end outcome that we're all trying to achieve.
Well, you know, we all have those times where we don't live up to either our own expectations or the expectations of others. And, you know, it's in these times that we often find the greatest learning and opportunities for growth. Can you tell us about a time that either you didn't meet your own expectations or those of others, and really how you dealt with that, what you learned from it, and how you came out on the other side?
Yeah, and it dovetails nicely with the questions that you asked earlier that we were discussing, is that change I decided to make in my life and with my wife. Is I had some professional jobs where I didn't feel like I was using my full abilities to serve, and decided to make a change. In one job, I felt like I was a tethered eagle, like I had this ability to soar and to contribute and to see great distances and to kind of capture things that can bring nourishment. One time I felt tethered, like I got to fly around a little bit, have that freedom, like, oh, I could reach my potential, but then I got kind of pulled back and wasn't able to continue soaring. And another professional experience, I felt like I let myself become a caged eagle, where I was kind of in a cage and I wasn't able to fly. It wasn't the best environment for me. And I didn't feel like I was contributing to the fullest part of my talents, how I could serve others and in our nation. So what I learned from that is to cut that tether, to break out of that cage that I had created, and then also use that experience to serve others. So if you look at the kind of imagery I use for my coaching and consulting company, Churchill Consultants, we have that eagle soaring. And so that's what I'm trying to do in this phase of life, and also to serve others that might have found themselves being tethered or caged, and helping them break free and soar to their greatest potential.
Yeah, I love it. You know, I recently heard a great example or metaphor of an acorn. You know, there are lots of acorns that fall, but all of them don't grow into mighty oak trees. They have to land in the right soil and the right environment. And unlike an acorn, which has to live with the environment it has, as humans, we have the ability to change and pick up and make the modifications that we want. And so kudos to you. Good job to make that change and really see where your purpose lies and what you can do to maximize that and add value to others. That's great. Well, what are some of the leadership theories that you've found useful in your professional work?
Well, three things come to mind, and they're all theories that Dr. Ron Heifetz talked about. I had the great privilege and honor to study with him at Harvard University, where I did my master's degree program. And there's three things that he taught me that I have used again and again in my professional life. And the first is that leaders need to be both on the dance floor, it's a metaphor, being both on the dance floor and on the balcony above the dancing, multiple dancers and patterns that come. You need to be in both places at the same time to be effective. Now, that doesn't mean we need to do it by ourselves, and sometimes we can have others help us to get that greater dance floor perspective. And that's where coaching can come in, can help us step back as leaders and then see that larger pattern. I like to think of dancing the tango. So that's a very involved dance where you're really attuned to your individual partner and you're really present in that moment to have that tango dance. And so that can be fully absorbing. And as leaders, we have to be present when we interact with the people on our teams or our company or organization. So you're present doing that tango, having that engagement with your colleague. At the same time, as a CEO or an executive, you want to be able to step up onto the balcony, kind of that split attention where you're seeing the whole patterns of all the couplings and teamwork of individuals and have that patterns that you see of the full dance floor inform your individual interaction. A second theory that I wanted to share is leading without authority. So early in my career, as I was developing as a young man, I thought about getting positions of authority, whether like in student government or climbing the ladder of the federal government, that I would get positions of authority, and then I would be able to exercise leadership. What Heifetz teaches is that sometimes the opposite is true, that when we're in positions of authority, it's actually more difficult to exercise leadership that's a kind of adaptive change leadership. He has a very particular example or definition of leadership. So think of Gandhi or Martin Luther King. In Gandhi, he led to the independence of the Indian people from the British Empire, the greatest military power on earth. And he didn't do that because he had any formal authority. No one appointed him the liberator of the Indian people, millions of people. No, he had informal authority and credibility that he built up over time and through a very simple life in speaking truth to power and leading by example. And that those things, that informal authority, ended up being more transformative than he probably could have done in any formal authority position. Same thing of Martin Luther King in our country. No one appointed him head of the civil rights movement to empower African Americans to get their full rights as citizens. He led through his example and through actually studying the Satyagraha, if I'm saying that correctly, of Gandhi, of peaceful, nonviolent protest. He was able to lead his fellow citizens to their full rights in the United States, collaborating with others, of course. But he did that through informal authority. So those are the first two that I like to share. The third principle that I like to share that I learned from Ron Heifetz is understanding a team's stress level or disequilibrium. He calls it disequilibrium. And it could be an individual level, one-on-one, being as a leader conscious of the persons you're interacting, their stress level, or a team, or an organization, or a country, whatever level you're operating. There's different ways we can influence that stress level, but the first thing is to being attuned to signs of stress. If there's too little stress, then there's probably little learning or change that's going to happen. If there's too much stress, then it could lead to blowback and having the leader being assassinated. I'm doing air quotes in assassinated. So if you have to be conscious of those. I remember having subordinate supervisors where their people would come to me because they had some complaint or things like that. And I would mention, thinking of one supervisor in particular, that was a direct report to me, I'd say, look, your people are a little too stressed with the change you're making because they're skipping over you and coming to me. And that was a sign of stress. And just be conscious of that so you can regulate their stress level and the change you're bringing, which was change I wanted her to bring. And so I just talked about the ways that you can regulate that stress level is introducing change in different increments. So not laying on all the change or stress at once. You can break it in the parts, and you can space it in between different times. So introduce some now and pause, introduce some a little bit later and pause, introduce some a little bit later as you monitor the stress level of those changes. And you can also titrate or adjust the amount of information, the intensity of it, how you deliver it, how you frame it. So as leaders, we have to be familiar with all those ways of regulating the stress of our team. And then if you're a master at that, you can help lead your team through change, whether it's because of external factors that require that change or because of aspiration of you and the people you lead. But if you're effective in that, you can lead them through that change and bring the whole team along.
That's very powerful. Thank you for sharing with us.
You're welcome.
Looking back, if you had the opportunity to give a younger Michael advice, what advice would you give him?
So it kind of boils down to three phrases and how to be. And the first one is be brave. And there's a song that I like to share perhaps later about being brave. It's been such a important phrase for me that's actually on my license plate of my car is be brave. That's related to pursuing your dreams, understanding your life mission. For me, it's to help people and organizations reach their full potential. So being brave in that, like the life change that you mentioned that we both made recently. So being brave to allow myself to soar in my service to others. The second one is be balanced. And that's a lesson I continue to learn over and over again in my life as I adapt to different challenges. To be balanced to the very different priorities they might have and have a balance between those of work and family and service and community and church or things like that. So being balanced with all those goals, I kind of smile at myself. I remember in college having one of these big Stephen Covey, Seven Habits of Highly Effective People organizers that had that dividing your time, my time, into different roles that I had in my life to make sure that I was balanced. And that's just one tool that I've used at different points in my life. So be brave, be balanced, and the third one is be true to yourself.
Wow, I think you are spot on with that. That is so important. Listen, if you had to describe yourself in one word, what would that one word be?
Brave. It's more an aspirational word.
Yeah.
So I'm not always brave. And brave doesn't mean be foolhardy.
Yeah.
But that's what I aspire to do is be brave.
It is so important to know where you're going and what you want to model yourself after. So I think that's great. Do you have any favorite books that you love to read or that you reflect upon, and why are they your favorites?
Books are so important because it's a way for us to share knowledge. And that was one of my roles at the FBI, was the Deputy Chief Knowledge Officer. And so I love opportunities to share what I've found valuable with others. So thank you for asking that question. For me, and it dovetails nicely with your question about the leadership principles or theories that have been useful in my professional work. And I mentioned Ron Heifetz, a leadership scholar at Harvard. He wrote a book called Leadership Without Easy Answers. And teaching leadership there, which his leadership teachings are also influenced by his background as a musician and a psychiatrist. And he weaves all those in to his leadership theories and his work with mid-career students from around the world that studied with him at Harvard. And I found that book and the theories articulated there so easily applicable to the workplace and professional settings and the challenges we face in those settings.
What does the next chapter of life look like for you?
I feel like I'm the beginning of a new chapter now, and I have a kind of a direction, a strategic direction that I want my life to go in. And it's headed in that direction because I'm being brave and I'm taking flight and soaring. And I just really excited about that path, that flight, and the universe unfolding as I pursue that direction. And the different ways that I can use the talents that God has given me and those blessings and sharing them with others as I reach my fullest potential.
Are there leadership lessons or thoughts that you have that we haven't touched on today that you'd like to share with the podcast audience?
I've shared some things that have influenced me and have been helpful to me. And I think it's important to have times of reflection, to have times, as Stephen Covey calls it, sharpen the saw. So not only do I encourage people to listen to this podcast, but to reflect on it and say, is there anything from hearing this that they want to change or incorporate into their life? So I'd encourage them to have that time of reflection and implementation.
Yes, I couldn't agree more. Reflection is so important to that growth and development process. Do you have quotes that really speak to you or inspire you?
I do. I have favorite quotes, and I also have music that inspires me. And as a musician yourself, I think you can appreciate that.
Absolutely.
So what I'd like to actually share with you and the people listening is a song that's inspired me and continues to inspire me. It's called If I Were Brave by Janis Stanfield and Jimmy Scott. And Rob, when I first heard this song, it was at a leadership conference where I've been serving high school sophomores and in helping to inspire their leadership ability for several decades now. And a regular speaker we have there, her name is Sandy Queen, and she shared this song and also performed it through dramatic sign language. So it's really hard for me when sharing this song not to also gesticulate also with my Italian roots. So I'm going to be doing that as I share these lyrics and some of the dramatic sign language that I remember, though our listeners will have to imagine my hands moving and the body movements. So here we go. If I were brave, what would I do if I knew that I could not fail? If I believed the wind would always fill up my sail, how far would I go? What could I achieve trusting the hero in me? And then it transitions to the chorus. If I were brave, I'd walk the razor's edge where fools and dreamers dare to tread, never losing faith, even when losing my way. What step would I take today if I were brave? So Rob, that's the chorus, and then it goes back into the main part of the song. What if we're all meant to do what we secretly dream? What would you ask if you could do anything? Like the mighty oak sleeps in the heart of a sea, there are miracles in you and me. And that image of a sea dovetails so nicely with what you were saying earlier about that acorn. And just think, if we have that seed in our heart, and if we nourish that, and we feed that, and we're true to ourselves, then it'll sprout and grow into a mighty oak tree. So here's how it song closes out. If I refuse to listen to the voice of fear, would the voice of courage whisper in my ear? And so to our listeners today, Rob, I asked them, what would you do today if you were brave and you knew that you could do anything and the wind would always fill up your sail?
I have never heard that song before, Michael. That's quite inspiring. All of us should strive to be brave in all the things that we do. That's really where we're going to gain and become the very best that we can be, is when we're right on that edge and are forced to be brave. Listen, you and I met through training when we both were certified in the Marshall Goldsmith Stakeholder Center coaching. I know that our listeners are going to want to learn more about you and get engaged with you. What's the best way for them to get connected to you?
Well, I'm going to share three ways that we can stay connected and collaborate. You know, I love collaboration. I love interacting with people. So I'd love to hear from anyone that is so moved after hearing this podcast. So three things come to mind. And, you know, it kind of comes from my improv comedy training, is that, you know, this rule of three, have three things. So the first is my company website, Churchill Consultants with an S.com. And then a particular interest would be the section on resources. And that song, If I Were Brave, I have a link to it from that website and many other resources that fellow leaders out there should find valuable in their practice of leadership. So that's number one. Number two would be on LinkedIn. So I have both a personal LinkedIn site and a Churchill Consultants LinkedIn site. So either way, listeners could connect and collaborate or launch new collaborations through those avenues. Finally, for those folks out there where that language of being an eagle that's tethered or in a cage or wants to soar and serve and is noble and has untapped talent or potential, you could be what I call my ideal client. That's part of our company mission, is to help eagles soar. So if that speaks to you, contact me through that website. You can book a free coach discovery session where you can experience what coaching's all about and we can get to know one another. I'm always looking for new clients to collaborate with and serve.
Well, Michael, thank you for coming on the podcast today. Thank you for being vulnerable. Thank you for being brave. And thank you for sharing your knowledge and your courage with others.
Thanks so much, Rob.